Something beautiful, something good. Do you ever long for that in your life? Something beautiful, something good. All the great philosophers of history say that truth and goodness and beauty are the supreme values of life. It was Christopher Morley who once said, in every man's heart, there's a secret nerve that answers to the vibration of beauty. So today I want to tell you a beautiful story. I will not try to preach it, for to preach it is to abuse it. I simply want to try to tell it. It's the story you've just heard, and you really need to share it with me. So in your pews is a Bible that looks like this. If you would take it out, and if you would turn to about page 29 of the New Testament, Matthew 26, I want us to just listen to this story and let it speak to us for a few moments this morning. Somewhere around page 29 should be in your pew Bible. Verse 6, we're starting. Now, while Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment, and she poured it on his head as he sat at the table at Bethany, about 2 miles out of Jerusalem, south of Jerusalem on the Jericho Road. That's where it happens, at the home of a man named Simon. Now, you can find a Simon on every corner of Jerusalem when this biblical passage was written. Everybody was named Simon. In fact, they're all over the Bible. There's Simon the Sorcerer and Simon the Zealot and Simon Cyrene, Simon Peter. Well, there are more Simons in Jerusalem than there are Jims in Brentwood. They're every place to be found. But this one is called Simon the Leper. The sounds of unclean must still be ringing in his ears. He knows what it is to be shunned. He knows what it is to be healed. And he invites Jesus home for luncheon. And while they're there, a woman came to him. Verse 7, a woman came to him. Who was she? Where did she come from? What was her name? What was she about? Some of the other gospel writers try to fill in the blanks on that, but Matthew doesn't bother to take care of any of it, just simply to say a woman. A woman who did something beautiful. She came to him with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment. The good stuff, not the cheap stuff. Not the olive oil that everybody had in their home to moisten their skin, but the fine perfume, the imported kind, the pure nard that came from India, that was handed down from generation to generation to generation to generation, that would be a part of your inheritance that you might expect from your family, something worth more than a year's wages. She comes with that, and she breaks it over the head of Jesus as he sat at the table. Something beautiful, something good, a kind deed from a strange woman, a loving act that no one can deny. Now, there's something about love when it's just pure that is so attractive. Love knows no limits. Love counts no cost. Love calculates no deal. Love never asks how much. Love just acts. Have you ever been the recipient of somebody's generosity and love like Jesus received that day? A couple of months ago, as Sandy and I wrestled with new medical news that was going to confront us in these days together, I walked home from a wedding rehearsal one Friday night and stepped into our family room to discover that our two sons were sitting there. Now, for those of you who do not know our family, we have one son who lives in Louisville, Kentucky, and the other one who lives in Fort Myers, Florida. And there they were. It scared me to death, to be honest. They hadn't announced their coming. And you know how it is when kids come home unannounced. You never know what they want when they get there. And I sat down for a moment and sort of assessed the situation. And then I dared to say, who called this meeting anyway? And then I said, if you came to collect your inheritance, you're a little early. And besides, there's not going to be much anyway. And then my older son, Wes, who is never short for words, I guess that's why he's a preacher. But nevertheless, he spoke up and said, relax, Dad. Cool it. Chill out. Every time there's been trouble, we've had trouble, you and Mom have always come. That's what our family does. So we just came to sit with you for a couple of days. Now I want to tell you, that is something beautiful. They gave us a beautiful, beautiful gift as we remembered days gone by and as we talked about the hopes and possibilities of the days that are to come. Something beautiful. Something good. The world needs something like that in life. And so she comes out of nowhere. We don't know her name. We don't even know her history, according to Matthew. And she performs a beautiful act, an extravagant act, an act that is extremely costly as she pours it out on Jesus' head. She gives it all. You see these little vials in which this kind of perfume was kept and often worn around the neck of a person was a tiny little thing. It had a tiny little opening at the end. You didn't want to give out too much, you know. And on a special occasion, maybe a couple of drops at the most that would perfume the place. But that's not what happens here. She breaks it all. She breaks it. And gives it to Jesus. Everything. All of it. Complete. Now, I've never completely understood what all is. When you and I sing, all to Jesus I surrender, all to him I freely give, I wonder what we really mean. Do you ever wonder that? This much I know, that most of us live in denial of what we have. That's why I brought a little assignment for you today. If you've had all this sermon, you can stand. You can spend the rest of the time working on this assignment. Where the sermon notes normally are, I've invited you to make a little assessment of all the assets that you've got at your fingertips. Not for me, not for the church, but for you. Don't turn it in. I don't want it. It's between you and the Lord. But you and the Lord need to talk about the all of your life, everything that you have, the all. How could I make a lesser sacrifice if Jesus gave his all? A beautiful, beautiful act. I get hungry for something beautiful every once in a while. Now, it would be nice if this story would just stop here. We could go home early and you would be happy and the Bible would be a little shorter to read. Unfortunately, that's not the way it happens. There's a but in this story. And the first one comes in verse 8, if you're staying with me. But when the disciples saw it, they were angry and said, why this waste? For this ointment could have been sold for a large sum and the money given to the poor. The disciples say, the in crowd, the called ones, the ones who have been selected, the ones who will lead the church into what it becomes in the future, the disciples. And they're angry, they're indignant, they're put out, and they're snarling. Why this waste? This could have been sold for a large sum of money and given to the poor. The disciples are saying this. It's a shocker right in the middle of the story. Or is it? Or is it? I've been in this business for 40 years. I'm not a contractor nor an architect. And to be honest with you, I don't even like doing buildings at all. And don't get scared, I'm not announcing a new building program. But over the years, I've built a lot of church buildings. And I've built a major, huge retreat center. And I've helped to build a major retirement center. Somehow it just seemed to be my lot. I was either at the wrong place at the wrong time or at the right place at the right time. I've never quite figured it out which way it actually happened to be, but that's been my lot in ministry. And I want to tell you, some of those have been $500,000, and some of them have been $5 million, and some of them have been $10-12 million, and some of them have been $100 million. And regardless of the size of the project, I've never yet led a campaign and build a building program that's related to the church or the annual conference without somebody standing up in a board meeting or standing up on a conference floor and saying, "What an absolute waste." The disciples are the complaining ones. I was not here when this sanctuary was constructed, but I know what some people call it, the methadome, the Taj Mahal, Six Flags over Jesus. I know what. The kinds of phrases that go about this campus and about particularly about the sanctuary. Let me tell you what I call it. A beautiful gift to God who always deserves our best. May I say that again? A beautiful gift to God who always deserves our best. Nothing more. And nothing less. There's another but in the story. Jesus has the last word. Verse 10. But Jesus, aware of this, says to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? She has performed a good service for me." I don't know where she learned it. I don't know how she got it. Stephen Covey hadn't written his book yet on the 7 habits of highly successful people, but she figured it out. She knew that in life you have to balance the urgent and the important. She knows that that's just the way life is. Everybody has to figure that out. Whether you've read the books or not, it is the challenge of life to balance the urgent and the important in life. Some things are unimportant and not urgent. And unfortunately, you and I spend a lot of time on the unimportant and the not urgent in our lives. I don't know why. You tell me why. I wish I really understood why the mantra of America is, "Are you staying busy?" I don't want to die with people saying, "Well, he stayed busy." That's not my goal in life, to stay busy. Things can keep us unimportant, not urgent, just stuff to do. Just so we can stay busy. That's not what life is about. Neither is life completely about those things that are urgent but unimportant as well. You know, those are the things that get our attention, the urgent things of life. Telephone calls are urgent. Emails are urgent, especially those that have got the red exclamation point beside them. But you know what I've discovered? That the great majority of telephone calls and the vast majority of emails are not very important at all. Some things are important, but not very urgent. That is the explanation that is clear in this story. Jesus is talking now, "For you always have the poor with you." Now, don't ever take this as a statement of Jesus' unconcern for the poor. You can't get that out of this book. It's all over the place in the Bible, Jesus' concern about the least and the lost. But he does understand the difference between important and urgent. Every need is not necessarily urgent. It may be dramatically and powerfully important, but it may not be immediately urgent. And that is exactly what Jesus is saying in this story, at this particular point. "For you always have the poor with you." Important, tremendously important, powerfully important, but not every concern has to be answered at this particular moment in life. But, the third but in this story, "but you will not always have me." By pouring this ointment on my body, she has prepared me for burial. You see, there are few things in life that are urgent and important. Do you understand? There are few things in your life that are urgent and important. I love the fall of the year. I love its beauty, even its subdued way because of the drought this year. It's just absolutely gorgeous to see the leaves change. But the problem with the fall of the year is that it is tremendously brief. It is here today and gone tomorrow. Just like that, it's gone. And it ought to be a lesson to us every time we live through an autumn. There are windows of opportunity that await you in your life. I don't know what they are, but God knows and you know, that await you this fall day that will not be around next spring. Those are the things that are urgent and important, and they've got to be done, and they've got to be done now. And you have to live into them. Now, if I've not learned anything else over the last few years, it's never let an opportunity go to waste. It is to seize it and make the most of it at that particular moment in time. Don't wait because tomorrow may not be here. No. And this woman understands that. And she acts on it. And Jesus says it's beautiful, just beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful. In fact, he makes a prediction that we're helping to come true right now, the last verse, verse 13. "Truly I tell you that whenever this good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in remembrance of her." Isn't that neat? The fragrance of that perfume has sifted through the ages. And now you and I, all these years later, can sit in a sanctuary and smell it. Can't you? Why? Because people long for the beautiful. You see, everything that happens in the rest of Matthew is bad news, except for the resurrection. It's about tragedy. And it's about treachery. And it's about blood and sweat and tears. And it's about a cross. And it's about Calvary. But here, one little story of an unknown woman, of something so beautiful that you and I would take an hour of our time to think about it today. Why? Because there's a hunger in the human soul for the beautiful. We search for it all the time. We want it. That's why we love creation. That's why we love to see a beautiful flower. We long for it. That's why we spend billions of dollars on cosmetics. That's why we enter into all kinds of relationships, searching for companionship. We want something beautiful out of life. Because God has put that hunger in the very soul, our very souls. Something beautiful, something good. It's what we long for. Maybe we need to search a little deeper. Maybe we need to dig down into our souls to find it. Maybe it's there to be broken and spilled out, till fragrance fills the room. To do something beautiful with no concern of who might be critical or call you a fool. Will you pour it all out for the beautiful and the good and the true?